Welcome to Viewpoints on today's show. Well, I'll be out and journalist Jules Bugiel will be in with a documentary produced in Montreal, Quebec about urban agriculture.
There are hundreds of thousands of fruit trees on private land that go unharvested every year. It's due to a lack of knowledge about those trees and a lack of social cohesion between the people who own the land and between the people who would like to harvest them. And so the goal of the collective is really to put in contact citizens and neighbors and residents of different neighborhoods in Montreal to allow those harvests to take place and then redistribute those fruits between the people who participated and the people who live in the neighborhood to ensure that they're going to be used and accessible by the people who live around them.
Montreal is home to 200 social, collective, and private initiatives, as well as 50% of urban farms. But climate change is playing the boogeyman, and citizens and environmental organizations are feeling the pinch.
So the scarabée has been very problematic now for like at least 5 years in Quebec, but it definitely is a bug that has established itself more and more in the Northeast as it becomes more and more warm and our winters get milder, and it's like range of habitat moves more towards the north with climate change. So it's definitely something we've seen explode in the last few years in Quebec.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, welcome to this special edition of Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassagne-Well. I'm off on vacation, and during that time, we'll have the great pleasure to have three journalists who will be filling in for me over the next few weeks with four great documentaries, and Jules Bugiel in Montreal will be the first. Jules, who will today tell us more about the importance of local urban agriculture and how it's being affected by climate change, even in the heart of the city. Jules visited a local farm as well as an urban orchard for this story. Urban agriculture is very popular in Montreal. The city is covered with community gardens. Tourism Montreal goes as far as to say that Montreal is one of the urban agriculture capitals. This thanks to a study conducted by AU Lab, the Laboratoire de l'Agriculture Urbaine, who compared 10 major world cities, including Brussels, London, Paris, New York, Toronto, and Vancouver. Montreal, who has its green roofs over the top of the Palais des Congrès and the commercial Lufa Farms, which built the world's first commercial rooftop greenhouse on an industrial building in Montreal. Montreal that dedicated some 25 hectares to some 100 community gardens. Close to 12,000 gardeners cultivate them. However, as popular as it is, sustainable urban agriculture had a rough ride over the past years, hit by unusual weather patterns, heavy rainfalls, lengthy dry spells, unusual warm weather for the season, insect infestations, and so on. So Jules Bugiel wanted to get in touch with some of the people who are in the center of the action. Here she is.
Summer brings the people of Montreal out of our apartments and into our streets and green spaces. Perhaps none more so, the Mont Royal itself. But even though you'll see people flock to the mountain and Parc Chaumont at its base, most Montrealers never get to see another green space just a stone's throw away. Behind the thick stone walls of La Cité des Hospitaliers, there's a whole other world. A little green oasis at the corner of Park and Pine.
You feel like very peaceful and alone and apart from what's happening right outside the walls. Like right there is the volleyball courts, there's the Parc Jean-Mons, but it's like very like dépaysant. Like you don't hear it, you don't see it, you feel like you're somewhere else.
This is Simone Chen, coordinator of Fruits Défendus, a citizen collective for urban gleaning that's been operating in the city since 2011 and in the orchard since around 2013.
There are hundreds of thousands of fruit trees on private land that go unharvested every year, and it's really due to a few factors that are very easy to address. It's due to a lack of knowledge about those trees and a lack of social cohesion between the people who own the land and between the people who would like to harvest them. And so the goal of the collective is really to put in contact citizens and neighbors and residents of different neighborhoods in Montreal to allow those harvests to take place and then redistribute those fruits between the people who participated and the people who live in the neighborhood to ensure that they're going to be used and accessible by the people who live around them.
Volunteers mostly go to people's private trees. But the collective also works here in La Cité. Once run as part of a religious hospital and convent, this orchard is one of the few and certainly one of the oldest left in the city.
There's about 50 trees that are left from what the orchard used to be here. It used to be a more diversified fruit orchard with peaches, pears, plums. There's still two plum trees left, but the rest are apple trees. The sisters sold this land to the city in 2019, and ever since then it's been kind of a transition period where the city is trying to find ways that they can continue to keep the patrimonial vocation of the site while at the same time creating a space that can be used by the community and used by the larger public also.
But even before the collective came along or the city stepped in, members of the community would come and pick the extra apples.
I know some people who used to come here and do some urban gleaning in like the 80s and 90s. So it's a long tradition that is that we're keeping alive with the collective, but we're not the first.
It's a testament to how much interest there is in urban gleaning and urban agriculture more broadly.
In Montreal, it's a city where there's a lot of interest and motivation for people to be involved in urban agriculture and food production. So there are a lot of people that would love to go harvest trees, but they don't have land and they don't have a tree.
Something I was really, because I'm not from Montreal, and when I got here, I was so surprised that instead of flowers in a pot, you had kale and mint and things you could pick, and I didn't know you could pick them, and I thought that was crazy.
Rayanne Fawaz works at OLAB, Montreal's big urban agriculture incubator. We met at one of their early projects, a collective garden at UQAM. It's a different approach than with community gardens, which is the classic model of how things are grown within the city.
The community garden would be each one his own plot, each one his own decisions and who's going to plant what at what season, but they get all the production of the gardens come to the individual. So you kind of have to sign up for these. A lot of the time the wait lists are very long, probably you've heard of that, like more than 10 years to get your own little plot. So it's really luck at this point. For the collective gardens, it's more of a everybody takes everything kind of mentality. Like everybody comes together to plant together, to take things together. Even some gardens, like the one on the street of Mont-Royal, that's a very temporary garden along the street, is open to everyone. So there's a collective planting everything, and then anyone can come and pick everything, like the people from the neighborhood.
Projects like the one at UQAM, what the city calls social and collective urban agriculture, really started taking off in the 2010s, going from just 75 in the city to almost 250. Rayanne says she's been shocked at how well they work in practice.
Before working here, I went through these gardens and I was like, obviously it doesn't work. Like, how do people get along and how do people communicate to not pick too much? Because if it was up to me, I would take everything. But I guess that a lot of people have a lot more conscience than we think. So they pick only what they want. Everything is written down, like how to do it, when to do it. If a plant is too small, it says, don't pick now, wait until I have enough leaves, which is such a cute thing to do. And people actually respect that. And I've sat there for a while and I see people coming with their own little bags and picking just what they need for their salad. Obviously, these gardens are not meant for you to eat from them on the long, like you're not trying to feed your family of four. It's literally just a little initiative to bring people together to communicate. And I feel like people know that.
OLAB has other projects, big public buildings growing food on their roofs, a hub where urban agriculture businesses share equipment and ideas. But they all share a core concern, creating connection between the people of Montreal and the food they eat. For Rayanne, that connection is personal.
In general, a lot of people ask me if urban agriculture can replace agriculture or can even, you know, get as big as we need it to be for the growing population. And it's always no. And it's always, okay, what's the point then? When it comes to me specifically, initially I wanted to to be a cook or work in a restaurant. And then the more I went into that, the more I got pulled out from the charm of restoration, because there was so much waste and there was so much lack of connection to the food we were eating, which led me to go into agriculture. And it's kind of inevitable whenever you're working with food and you kind of realize how much goes into it, how much time and effort and like, you can't throw a tomato after working in urban agriculture, and that's the or any agriculture. Like, when you see how much time goes into it and how cheap we buy our food and how, yeah, I mean, you kind of awaken this new perception of, like, the food you eat, which I think we should all have, which is why urban agriculture is amazing, because everyone has access to it, and that's a main thing. Like, every resident needs to have access to a certain farm. If you talk to anyone, most people don't know where their food comes from, so something to work on.
Okay.
What is my surprise basket? Flowers.
I do?
Yes.
And your surprise basket is a single today?
Yeah.
You got one.
This is our busiest drop-off so far this year, and we prepared 103 baskets to leave, and so we have 2.5 hours to distribute 103 baskets, and we're almost done. It's like, you can see there's not much food left.
This is Jenna Jacobs, co-founder of La Ferme Coop au Chant qui Chante, the farm where the fields sing. We're just catching up on Avenue Duluth, where she's delivering fresh fruits and veg from her farm, located just over an hour outside the city.
The system is like, there's some bins where everybody gets one thing from that bin, and then there's other things that are choices. And I put the choices side by side, so the seasoned clients know which ones to take.
The farm is unique in many ways. It's earned a rep among its mostly Montreal-based supporters as a queer farm, a co-op farm, and more recently, a pro-Palestine farm.
You want to see the sheep over here?
Oh, yeah.
But it's also part of a larger movement of local agriculture here in Quebec.
Our farm and other farms, we push this idea of the family farmer. And so lots of us have, a family doctor, family dentist, even family mechanics and other things. But we don't necessarily have a family farmer. So when people come to get their food, there's a farmer there present. And so I talk to people about, like, the growing conditions. People are curious what's happening on the farm. I talk to them about the different vegetables. I know all these vegetables pretty well. I'm the one that goes out into the field and chooses what's in the basket. And I really want to choose the things that are going to be the most delicious and the most abundant for people in their baskets.
Different ones. I mean, our harvest list is huge right now. The amount of things that are ready that we can put in a basket is quite large. And so it's just like right now we're trying to like prioritize things that won't hold in the field. Like some things like beets and carrots, you know, we can leave them there a few extra weeks and it doesn't change anything. But other things like broccoli, you cut it and then it doesn't keep for very long. It doesn't keep for very long on the plant.
I do really believe that this is like a really sustainable way to grow food, to grow it on a small scale, like highly diversified, purchasing straight from farmers. Like it feels to me like it's really efficient. When I see the larger food distribution system in Quebec, where we're trucking in for food or even harvesting it from big farms, it's going through like, you know, one, two different middle people before it's actually getting to the consumer. And so the food's older, you're paying a lot of middle people for like just moving stuff around. When I feel like the way we do it, pull it out of the fields, you know, we put it into our cold room one night and then bring it into Montreal. It seems like, to me, it seems really efficient of a way to do it. And then we're also like way less impactful, I think, like to just have less of an ecological impact from these activities.
Back at UQAM, the ecological impacts are also on Rayanne's mind. Part of OLAB's work is in developing projects toward a circular economy.
They use the waste of breweries, for example, that create brewing waste or malt or wheat that already has been, the flavors have been extracted from them, but they still have a lot of nutrients. So they send those to mushroom farms that will then use the leftover nutrients to grow mushroom and then compost the rest. And then this compost can then go into a communal garden that will feed the garden in any leftover new, because there's so much happening in those little substances that you can really extract from them as much as possible. So let's say these go to feed the gardens, then all the production from the gardens would then go to another collective that will use them to transform products to eat or even in a restaurant. So we're really talking about a closed loop where we try to waste as little as possible.
And there's another feature to a lot of these projects, and that's climate resilience.
Urban agriculture is a lot more resilient to climate change because it's controlled environments most of the time. When it's not outside, it's inside. It can be in a serre, in a greenhouse, or it can be in the basement or in any kind of form that it's controlled. So obviously they're a lot less affected by climate change.
But other types of local agriculture may not have that same control. At the Fail Mochon Quichantz, they're seeing the impacts of climate change firsthand.
Like a late frost in the spring or an early frost in the fall is like really devastating for us. It's like we can lose tons of stuff. I think more what we're seeing, instead of like this kind of blanket statement of things being earlier, is just more chaos.
That's why these days, Jenna and the team are making some changes to the way they grow things.
The way we're moving and following the lead of some other farms is to have more what we call protected culture in the spring. And so this is, these are vegetables grown under plastic, so like greenhouse structures. And we're able to just regulate the weather or the climate a little bit better inside of these structures. And so we're in the process on this farm of building the biggest greenhouse we're going to have. It's going to almost triple the amount of space we have under protected culture.
But some climate impacts are harder to manage than others.
Most of our vegetables are hand harvested, hand planted. And so where we're seeing it hit the hardest is on the employees, on the people that work on the farm. And so like the heat waves is most of it. And trying to work through these heat waves, the heat wave we had last week, for example, it was tough. You know, we were seeing like temperatures like in the 30s, like 32, 34, feels like 40. And that's just like, it makes it for really hard conditions to work in.
There is a machine that we've used in the past. This year it's just not really working for two. Like it goes behind the tractor that kind of cuts under the garlic, and then it loosens everything, makes it a lot easier to harvest. But yeah, we have too many weeds this year.
One of the folks harvesting garlic was Elle, who says they love being outside at the farm, but find it difficult to work during the hot summer months.
Yeah, it's really intense, and I guess I get really affected by the heat pretty intensely, so get heat exhaustion very quickly. I think from getting, you know, once you get heat stroke once, it actually is just, you're more susceptible. Yeah, so I don't know, we've like brought out a big cooler for everybody to have access to water all the time. And
so helpful.
Yeah, try to have some, I don't know, if people need longer breaks or this kind of thing. I think there's, I mean, also when there is the wildfires, when we're affected by the wildfire smoke, there's like, I mean, there are links to climate change for that. And that's also really, that was really intense last year for us here, and obviously horrible for many people this year too.
This is one super good example of the diga that are caused by Japanese beetle, which we see here procreating. They make this, they eat the leaves and they make this kind of like lace pattern, and then the leaf can't do any more photosynthesis and it causes a lot of delays in the growth. So you see it's been like completely destroyed. And you can see there's still scarabée japonais everywhere.
Back at the orchard, Simone is seeing big changes year to year. This year, bugs are decimating their summer apples. She says that ever since the orchard changed hands, the city of Montreal stopped spraying the trees. An end to pesticide use isn't a bad thing, but it hasn't been replaced with an alternative. And climate change is making the problem worse.
So the scarabée has been very problematic now for like at least 5 years in Quebec, but it definitely is a bug that has established itself more and more in the Northeast as it becomes more and more warm and our winters get milder, and it's like range of habitat moves more towards the north with climate change. So it's definitely something we've seen explode in the last few years in Quebec.
It's not just invasive species causing problems. Local insect populations are undergoing big changes too.
This year, there are a lot of caterpillars, like a really exponentially huge amount of caterpillars that make these like webs in the trees that can also be very damaging to the growing cycle of the tree, because the caterpillars will eat through the leaves of the tree and once again disrupt the photosynthesis of the tree and interrupt its ability to grow. So because we had such a mild winter this year, we had like an explosion of these caterpillar populations all over Quebec this year. If they're controlled, it can be manageable, but at the same time, it's really kind of shocking to see such a huge amount of damage caused in one year by an insect that in the past wasn't considered that much of a problem.
The orchard may be a niche case, but in some ways, it's representative of an approach to agriculture in transition. If the transition isn't complete, the trees aren't going to thrive.
The only good solution would be to ensure there's as much diversity as possible, because the only way we can have resilience in an ecosystem is through diversity of species, of plants, of cultivars. So for example, when we have a problem of a certain insect in the orchard, the problem isn't the insect. The problem is that we're lacking the predators that predate that insect. Why? We don't have the habitat for the predators to be present in this kind of sterilized, domesticated setting. So it's a setting around us where we see a lot of lawn, we see a lot of apple trees. That's it. That's not an ecosystem. So if we want to be able to combat the insects that come to attack the trees in this setting, because they're kind of like an easy target, because there's, you know, it's a perfect place for example, a Japanese beetle to come install itself, because there's nothing but apple trees and lawn. When we set ourselves up for failure like this and lack that diversity and lack the ability to plant the kind of native plants and the different flowering plants and the different plants that should be in an indigenous habitat, we throw everything out of balance, and that allows more disequilibrium to pursue. So knowing that we're going to be facing even more stressing conditions coming, with all of the extremes in weather that's coming, all of the different fungal and insect problems that will be coming as the weather warms in Montreal and we move up a zone, the only good response is to ensure that we are planting really good diverse habitats that are going to be interesting for those native animals to come live in a way that will create kind of bio controls and checks naturally.
Diversity can also be in terms of the crops that are grown. That way, if one thing does poorly, there are others ready to take its place.
We can often think of the diversity creating like resilience. So in any year, there's always some cultures that do better, some crops that do better, some crops that do worse. And having a huge diversity means that like there's always going to be a climate for something to do better. This year, for example, due to some of the early conditions, it feels like our weed pressure is pretty high, and so it's not been a good year for things like carrots and beets. But some of the other cultures where we were doing a little bit better on, the tomatoes are doing great this year. Cucumbers, zucchinis, all did great, and so us having that diversity and being a basket farm as well allows us to kind of alter what we give people to reflect what's doing well on the farm. So we don't have a set menu through the year. It's like every week I walk through the farm and I see what's ready, and that's what goes in the basket.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good.
Hello.
Say hi, Sue.
Sue, who coordinates the farm pickups on Avenue Duluth, says the benefits aren't just in changing our food systems or the way that people connect to them. They're also in connecting people to each other.
For me, it's like a really beautiful thing to see people sharing recipes, sharing ways to prepare food, having conversations about ethical food practices and the necessity to have small farms for biodiversity. People are just so incredibly grateful to get as ethical food as you can get in Montreal. Like, given that we're on occupied territory, this is as ethical as it gets. And so people are thrilled to be here. And for me, I think it's really important to try to create, even if I have just like a 2-minute interaction with someone, I want that interaction, I want people to feel connected. I want people to feel like they matter. I want people to feel like this is a place that they can come and chat, even if they feel like it. And so we do develop relationships with people, you know, like I definitely have over the last 3 years. And
that connection is something Jenna feels as well.
Like, I really enjoy bringing my food here to, like, feed the people of the city, because I think they need this kind of food. But it's also really nice that, like, the connection with the clients. I see them week to week, and then, like, there's a bunch of people here I've seen several years in a row now, too. So, like, I've seen babies get born. I've seen kids grow up. I've seen people grow older, yeah. Including myself. I didn't have gray hair when I started this, right? And now I got these beautiful gray streaks in my hair.
And there is some truth to that. But connections can form just over a piece of fruit. Back in the orchard of La Cité, most of the summer apples were too ravaged by bugs to fruit. But even there, among traps thick with beetles, we managed to find it. One perfect apple.
Wow.
Oh, elle est belle. C'est la première fois que j'ai vu ça. What the fuck?
Belle. Presque.
Yeah. Do you want it?
Can I...
Yeah. Hopefully there's no surprise in there.
Yeah, so good.
Wait.
Let's try it.
Yeah. How's it?
It's good. You want?
Ils sont prêts.
Mmm. No. It's actually good.
Une petite dernière qui c'est... Ça devait être vraiment la dernière.
Je suis étonnée. Vous goûtez?
Non, c'est quand même. J'en ai mangé déjà.
I'm Jules Bijal, reporting with the Local Journalism Initiative. Thanks for listening.
So our Montreal journalist, Jules Bijal, had the last bite. After all, thanks so much to her and her guests for filling in for us this week. A great documentary about urban agriculture initiatives. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. For comments, story ideas, or just to tell us more about yourself, village, city, or country, our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. So that's it for us this week, and until the next, ciao.
Radio@frequencynews.ca. Radio@frequencynews.ca.